is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties. We're doing another radio show segment for Over the Garden Gate, and we are talking to our multi-talented Tuolumne Master Gardener named Jim Bliss. Now, Jim has written quite a few articles for the Union Democrat and My Mother Lo, the online news source. But we're going to be asking Jim questions on this one article. The title is Low Tunnels for Winter Gardening. Hello, Jim. Welcome.
Well, hello again.
So soon. Now I've got to ask you right off the bat. With this title, Low Tunnels for Winter Gardening, what are you talking about? What's a low tunnel and why do we want to use it for a winter garden?
Well, a way to talk about a low tunnel is a series of less than four foot high or less hoops stuck in the ground somehow if you're going to garden in the ground. Or I put mine on top of raised beds, because I do all of my gardening in raised beds because I can control the water better. And then it's covered with a 6 mil polyethylene sheet that has UV resistance. That way it lasts longer than a year, because we're all used to going to our big box stores and buying polyethylene and then getting really disgusted because it just kind of shatters. Well, it's because they're making... You're buying the cheap stuff. I got mine online, and that way it'll last 5 or 6 years.
Oh, good. Now, how long have you been doing this?
Well, I've messed with that kind of thing on and off for a number of years, but I lived in France for a while. And so when, I talked about driving through the French countryside and seeing these 100-meter long caterpillars, because the word for low tunnel in France is chenille, and that's the word for caterpillar. And they do look like caterpillars crawling across the ground, and the French are very careful with their market gardening, so it follows the contour and they wiggle. Okay, so in France, you've got all these open air markets, and the market gardeners sell in cities, well, town center to city center markets in stalls, just like our farmers markets. And they produce year round, and it's not a heavy snow country. I've seen low tunnels used in heavy snow. It is possible. But you have to go kick the snow off of them. And you have to build them strong enough for snow. We get a little snow here. And we did just fine. Because I'm such a geek.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a geek. So I put a thermometer out there that I can read from the house. And it doesn't freeze in my tunnels, even when it's snowing.
Now, what elevation are you at?
We're at 2,600 feet.
And how much snow would you say you get a year?
We're not in a heavy snow area. We get probably 6 inches at a time, 2 or 3 times a year.
Okay. But that's still, that's still plenty. Now, by doing these low tunnels, when do you start planting? Like, how does that extend your growing season?
Well, last year I planted some of the stuff in July. And so it was very healthy and going and growing. before the cold weather came. And okay. So we had broccoli and cabbage, and I actually like rutabaga. The Scottish call them neeps. And so, you know, rutabaga, like mashed potatoes, you know, with lots of butter. Maybe it's the butter.
Could be.
But I had rutabaga in there. I tried carrots and failed miserably. So I don't know what I'm going to do about carrots yet. But this year we've... Go ahead.
No, so... When you plant it in July, and we're talking about cool season crops, so then when are you harvesting these vegetables, and how long can you keep on harvesting?
We had harvest from November through March.
November through March?
Yeah.
That's a long harvesting season.
Well, we had broccoli. And there's a type of broccoli, what do they call it?
Romanesque,
that actually forms a head that's a fractal pattern. It's really cool looking. It's closer related to a cauliflower than a broccoli. So it's a little bit milder form of broccoli. And we had that in there. And then... What else do we have in there?
Onions
and the Swiss chard. I have to admit, I read an article the other day on the vegetable fads and stuff like that. And they said that the sale of kale has gone down considerably in the last 5 years because it doesn't taste good. So we grow Swiss chard, and we would get big bunches of Swiss chard that ended up in Kung Pao chicken and stir fries and all sorts of things like that. And the Swiss chard was by far and away the most successful crop in there.
Oh, gosh. And it also sounds yummy, the way you described it. That sounds like the way to cook it.
It is. And, you know, that's the idea, is to have fresh greens. You're not going to be growing tomatoes in low tunnels. It, you know, not here, not now.
Right.
But you can plant them in there in March and you'll make it through.
Gosh.
So that's one of the things we're going to be doing this year.
Now, Jim, you've got kind of, I think it's a really innovative way to structure these tunnels. I know you mentioned as far as, you know, rebar and then the PVC making the tunnels, but you've got it where you can roll up one side of this tunnel, which
I can roll up both sides. So both flows through. And what I did was just you can buy these clips, but they're not as strong as the ones that I make. I just cut a section lengthwise out of PVC pipe and make it so that it'll snap over a 3/4 inch pipe, make it so it'll snap over a 1/2 inch pipe, and then cut it in sections about 1 inch to 1.25 inches long. And I use that to snap the pipe on. And so I just ran one 12-foot length of 1/2 inch PVC and just started about 6 inches of the plastic on it and snapped it on there, and then put a T on the end that I put a crank through, just, you know, kind of a L-shaped thing that I made out of PVC again. And I can crank those things up pretty much all the way to the top. And for those of us that live up here, we know that we have some really warm days in the wintertime. When the sun comes out, it gets into the 70s or even low 80s on some days, because the sun is just beating down. And your low tunnel will just cook with that kind of thing. So I wanted to be able to grab that heat and keep it from getting too much. So I roll those tunnels up and down mornings, and then roll them down in the evenings when I know it's going to freeze, because clear day means freezing up here.
Right.
And that way I can gain all the warmth and sunlight and then protect that. And my raised beds or the ground acts like a heat sink. So you end up having a battery or a heat battery that really promotes the growth.
Okay.
It gets pretty lush in there.
Wow. There was a picture that you sent me that there was some kind of plant growing out of the tunnel. It got so big.
Those are Kentucky Wonder beans.
Oh.
And okay. We use the tunnels as structure for things that were growing in the summer. I just take the plastic off of them because the way I roll them up means that I can just roll them all the way to the top and lift it off.
Oh, clever.
So I have a way to store my plastic.
Oh, very clever. Now, in the wintertime with this tunnel, with this covering, do you think by any chance it helps with preventing insects from flying in or any type of, do you think it helps out at all with that?
Do you want me to tell you about the cabbage whites infestation that we had?
Oh, sure.
as the weather got warmer, we had a ton of the little green caterpillars that come from cabbage white moths or butterflies. And so this year we're ready for them. The Bacillus thuringiensis is sitting on the shelf waiting for those little green worms to come out again, and it'll handle them safely, really safely.
Right.
So yeah, we had some kinds of insect problems, but not others. And as the days got warmer and the birds got more active, finches love Swiss chard.
Oh.
So we're probably going to use some netting over the Swiss chard areas to keep the finches out, because where the finches go, my bird dog follows. And he really clomps things down.
I bet. So he's chasing the birds.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. But now with those same beds, you just remove, it's easy to remove that plastic covering.
Right.
And then you're able to start using the same beds for your spring and summer crops.
Right. And that's why there's French, that's why the Kentucky Wonders are growing out of the tunnel in that picture. Because that, as soon as we had harvested the stuff that we had in there in the winter before, that was where the rutabagas were. We put in the Kentucky Wonders, and it's a legume. So basically it's renitrogenating the soil and doing all sorts of good stuff for it.
Right. I thought it was interesting in your article, you mentioned that one of the gardening authors, I just think it's amazing. It says you can extend your season by one or two USDA zones with these tunnels.
That was Elliot Coleman, and
okay.
He gardens up in Connecticut, and he's basically is a truck gardener. And he claims this is not a UC thing, but he claims that you can actually change your microclimate under those low tunnels by two USDA zones. And, you know, we get enough frost here. We got down into the below 20 degrees last winter, and we do pretty much every year. And, you know, 19, 18 degrees will wipe out everything. But when you've got that low tunnel over it, okay, it may get down to freezing in there on an 18 degree day. But I also put a low tunnel, a short one, over my wife's bird of paradise that she moved up from the Bay Area. So we actually had a blooming bird of paradise this summer. Nice. Because we put it in a low tunnel and then put Christmas tree lights, the old incandescent type off there. And you can buy a thermostat.
Good idea.
Yeah. You can buy a thermostat that turns on the lights
at great idea.
35 degrees. So we had all of our.
Oh my gosh. Well, hey, Jim, great idea. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. You're back again, and I want to thank you so much for this show and for, again, all that great information.
Sure.
Hello, everybody. This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I am at the UCCE office here in downtown Sonora. It's a lovely day, and it's wonderful. I'm talking to Linda Reevely. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Debbie.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
And I haven't seen you for a while. What are you going to talk about today?
Well, lately I have been picking up acorns from my yard and preparing to process them. So today I'd like to talk to you about acorn processing.
Wow, that's wonderful. I think a lot of us have acorns and just...
And want to know what.
A lot of us, you know, I'm afraid, you know, probably take them somewhere and don't use them.
I know. There's a number of things acorns are really good for. I have a friend who feeds them to pigs.
Okay.
Which creates ham similar to the Serrano hams of Spain, which are also fed on acorns.
Really?
Yeah.
And it
changes the flavor of the meat.
So is it I'm guessing maybe a richer taste?
A little more complex kind of taste. Acorns are not a particularly flavored or strong flavored product. Okay. They have a lot of protein and a lot of vitamins.
Really?
They do. And as our local Miwok would attest, we're a mighty good food for keeping people healthy and well over long periods.
Well, that's true. I mean, that was their primary item in their diet.
It was. And they made special baskets for picking them up and leaching them and doing the various processes it takes to actually eat acorns. Acorns are one of the few nuts that we can't just eat because of the high tannic acid.
Okay. And
it would be like eating tea bags.
Ew.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound appetizing.
And real acidic acorns do taste a little bit like tea.
Okay.
You just sort of open them up and taste them when they're raw.
Okay.
So we have noticed in our yard mm-hmm. that our dogs like the acorns from a certain tree, which is both instructive and kind of unfortunate because my normally 85-pound dog weighs now about maybe 95.
Wow.
And instead of looking like a cute little round dog, now looks like a furry coffee table because she's gotten kind of square. With extra fat from eating acorns. And this happens to us every year. So I even made acorn muzzle for her the other day because it's really hard to keep her out.
Oh my gosh.
Funny thing. But I've heard all these things about acorns. And as everyone around here who has trees has noticed, this year is probably the most magnificent acorn crop we've had in many, many, many
really?
Years. There are more acorns of greater size than we've ever seen on our property, and we've lived there 10 years.
Oh my gosh. So, any idea why?
I have a number of ideas why.
Okay.
But the first and primary, only important one is we've had three pretty decent water years in the winter.
Okay. Right.
And the oak trees are in as good a health right this year as they've ever been in the last 10 or 15 years when it comes to having enough water. And therefore, they're capable of producing a large crop.
Well, that makes sense.
They pollinated late this year because it was so cold during May. But they pollinated very heavily in June, as anyone who has a car that parks under them would attest. There was acorn pollen everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's produced these large crops of these beautiful, big nuts.
And what kind of oak tree?
Well, we have a number of different oak trees. The one that the dog seems to prefer is a blue oak, but we also have some black oaks on our property that are producing the very large acorns. The biggest acorns I've ever seen come off black acorn, or black oaks. Oh, and some of these are 3 inches long.
Really?
They're just amazing.
That's huge.
They're huge. You see the squirrel with it, and it looks like, well, I should go stash this somewhere, but I don't have anywhere this big. Right. So they don't seem to even be storing acorns much right now because the acorns are so much bigger than they normally are.
Oh, my goodness.
White oak acorns, in my experience, have all been, maybe an inch long sort of a half inch across.
Okay.
And this year they're an inch and a half long and they're almost a full inch across.
Wow.
Much bigger. So it brings to mind that wonderful idea. Let's make acorn flour.
Oh.
Again, a food processing episode of enormous importance in your life. But it's kind of fun. And what it starts with is you have to go pick up the acorns.
Okay.
Which is good because that way they won't be sprouting underneath your trees and creating an entire forest of little bitty oaks that will attract deer like instantly.
You mean the deer love to eat the little tiny sprouts?
They do. They love those little sprouted oak trees and they will come and eat them right off to the ground, which is kind of an annoying thing. And then they won't have acorns coming up everywhere, which I'm afraid we will this coming year anyhow. No matter what you do, you can't find them all.
Right, right.
So the way I would go about picking a good tree to work under is to choose to get some acorns from different trees, break them open, and then just taste a little bit of the raw meat. And if it has that super tea leaf taste, then you're going to have to leach those acorns seriously to get that tannic acid out of them.
Okay.
But if it has a softer taste, you won't have to put quite so much processing into them.
Meaning leaching.
Leaching.
Okay.
And the way you go about dealing with acorns is you gather them up, sort out all the leaves and stuff that you've picked up with them, wipe them off with a damp cloth. Don't get them wet. I've already made that mistake. Don't get them wet.
What happens if you get them wet?
The shells get really soft and you can't break them.
Oh.
So you have to dry back out again. And then there's always a possibility you'll mold them if you do that. So basically just wipe them off with a damp cloth. And then break them, crack them. You don't have to get them out of the shell, just crack them open. And I have a friend who just sits around when he watches TV and cracks them with a pair of pliers. I have another friend who puts them in a tray and smacks them with a brick, which is what I'm going to try and do.
Huh.
Which is, I just lay out a whole bunch of them in a tray where they can't roll off or get away. You just pound on them until you break them. You'll notice if you walk on them, they all crack and pop.
Sure.
They break pretty easily.
Right.
The thing is you don't have to, after that point, you don't have to do a lot of cleany-uppy kind of work. You just have to dehydrate the meat at that point. And you do it with the shells. You don't worry about it. You'll pick those out later.
Okay.
So put them in cookie sheets. Put them in a dryer if you own a dehydrator. And dehydrate them until they're pretty firm, hard little nuggets, essentially. And then once they're at that point, that's when we start to leach. And we leach them in a number of ways. You can steam leach them with boiling water. There's directions on the internet. Just look it up.
Okay.
Processing acorns. Or you can cold water leach them, which is the way that the most Native Americans did it because it retains a lot more of the nutritional content for the acorns. And to do that, you can put them in a bag. I would suggest if you've ever had a lingerie bag when you did your laundry that's kind of mesh.
Right. A netting.
The netting. You need a netting bag.
Okay.
Stick them in there. I have some big ones that came from a dry cleaning business. They've never been dry cleaned, but they came from this business that they use when they process individual garments that belong to, six of these belong to this person, seven of those fabrics, and keeps you straight.
Right.
I have several of those. That's what I'm going to use.
Oh.
And then you have to have them in some situation where you can put water on them, let them soak. You're going to have to dump the water off twice a day and put on fresh water.
Twice a day. So are you thinking
I'm going to do morning and evening.
Morning and evening.
And the point of this is partly if you just leave them in water, only so much acid will leach out. It gets to a kind of stasis point.
Okay.
But in addition, it's more likely to ferment.
Oh, we don't want that.
We don't want that. This is not a fermented food.
Right.
So you want to change the water twice a day. Now, there's a suggested way of doing this that just I thought was a crack up, but I'm not going to do it because I also think it could be no end of trouble, which is to put your bag of acorns in your toilet tank. And every time someone flushes the water in your toilet tank is clean.
Right.
It's perfectly useful for drinking or whatever you might need to in an emergency.
Okay.
But every time you flush, you're flushing that water through your toilet,
right,
and bringing fresh, clean water in.
It sounds brilliant, but for some reason it just sounds creepy.
I think it's just going to gum up your toilet myself.
I'm thinking, I need to explain this to a plumber.
I know, there's all those little threads from the bags. I have no idea what happened. I know, it just sounds crazy.
It does sound brilliant at the same time, but it's I don't know why, but I just can't think that I would want to do that.
No. Well, you know, makes perfect sense to not do that. I think just I have a big 5-gallon jug that actually has a spigot on the bottom for making like big bunches of lemonade or ice water.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just going to use that. I'm putting my acorns in
there. I could go with that.
In the sink. I'm going to put it right over the sink. Fill it up, let them leach, open the little spigot, let the water run out, fill it up again, close the spigot, fill it up again.
Right, that's a good point.
And I think that will probably work.
Oh,
and once I've leached them to, and you taste them, you just keep tasting them, and they taste mild, kind of nutty, that's the time to stop. You get out your little crumbles, you let them dry off. Again, it's back in the dehydrator, and dry them until they're really pretty firm, and then you can grind them up in your food processor.
Wow.
Or if you have a corn mill, you could use a corn mill. I would not run these through my dedicated flour mill if you are one of those who blue grinds wheat.
I don't have a flour mill.
I do.
Oh, okay.
And it's a stone mill, and it's difficult enough to clean as it is. And these are fairly oily.
Oh, you don't expect them,
but this is a fairly oily nut.
Okay.
And so a corn mill that has metal burrs is easy to clean. A stone mill isn't so easy to clean. So
I love using the acorns for food. I just love
it. I know.
It.
And there's wonderful recipes. A couple of years ago, I had acorn gnocchi.
I have no idea what that is.
Which are little puff, kind of like little pillows, normally made out of potatoes.
Oh.
But these were made out of acorn meal, and they were in brown butter, and they were absolutely delicious. Served to us by Todd Stolp, who used to be the county medical director here in Tuolumne. Fabulous meal. But I also saw some lovely acorn noodle recipes.
Oh my gosh.
That sound like they'd be really good.
That sounds really yummy.
And they have a
yummy.
Very nice taste. And you can make bread or any other number of products.
So you
with
can
these.
Make bread
yeah.
out of the flour.
So the big takeaway here is they're on the ground. You need to wipe them off.
Okay.
You need to remember that leaching is important and you should do it. I know a lot of people don't, but it's not the healthiest thing to eat that much tannic acid.
Okay.
And that you, when you grind them, you're going to end up with two different levels of stuff. One level is the powder that will come off that you can get through a strainer, and the other will be what we call acorn grits, which can be boiled to make mush.
Ooh.
And
I'm not sure if mush sounds good, but...
Well, mush with maple syrup and butter is
one
of the great lovelies of the morning.
That's true.
And acorn mush is delicious. So.
Okay.
So there you go. That's my current project. Oh, third caveat, pick at least a gallon of these things, because all this is a lot of trouble, and you may as well have enough to actually count.
Okay. So it takes probably more acorns than you think.
Yeah.
Okay, great advice.
Like all things like this, it takes more acorns than you think.
And I wonder, maybe at some point I can taste part of your project.
Okay. Sounds like a good idea. All right.
Thank you, Linda.
You're welcome, Debbie.
Okay.
Happy
Bye-bye.
Acorns.
Yes. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.